Tara, should look up. Number one.
These settings are hopefully a little bit more informal. So I hope guys feel free to ask questions in the middle, talk up, have any good ideas, not such good ideas, whatever it is, please feel free. Let's try to go through really a basic sugya throughout the course of the next couple of weeks. It's a sugya, it's a topic that's so fundamental, it's so basic, so essential to everything that we do. You know, we spend a lot of time learning Mishnayos and Gemara and Halacha, and very often we missing some of the underpinnings, some of the basic yisodos, the basic fundamental principles of understanding what Torah Shabbat is all about. Some basic questions in terms of what we mean when we speak about Torah Shabbat. I'll just throw out a couple of quick terms now that I'm sure many of you are familiar with. Halacha Moshe Sinai, what exactly does that mean? What exactly is the role of Machlokas? How is it that on the one hand the Torah is Min HaShemayim, the Torah is from heaven, if there's room for disagreement, how could that be? We speak a lot about Psak Halacha, I pass in this way, you pass in this way, my Rebbe says this, your Rebbe says this, and what does this all mean? What is this all about? Such a conglomeration of so many different things. So what we're going to try to focus on is to just get a little bit of a clarity. What do we mean? What is Torah Shabbat? And ultimately it's going to govern everything that we do in terms of our learning, in terms of our performance of mitzvahs. It is an absolute given in authentic Torah Judaism that there were two Torahs that were given by Hashem to Moshe. By the way, if I use any terms, I know it's different groups, different backgrounds, if you use any terms that you find difficult, please just stop me right away. It's an absolute basic fundamental principle that Hashem presented to Moshe Rabbeinu two Torahs. One, of course, is the Torah Shemichsav, the written Torah, from the first days of Bereishis to the last Lamed of his last Bracha. And the other is the Torah Shabbat Pes, the oral tradition with all its different components, as we will see what exactly those components are. It is obvious, even from the Torah Shabbat Pes itself, from the written Torah, that there exists a Torah Shabbat Pes, that there existed a oral tradition. The Torah itself in Bashas Maschanon mentions immediately after the Aseres HaDibros that Moshe Rabbeinu tells us that the Osi Tziva Hashem Ba'isa Hila Lamed is Chakuk Mishpatim, that Moshe recounts that Hashem instructed him to teach Bnei Israel the different laws, to elaborate upon the laws. The Torah in Parshas Re'eh speaks about Allah as a Shechita and tells us V'zavachta kasher tivisicha, that you have to slaughter an animal like I have commanded you. And nowhere in the Torah Shebichsav, nowhere in the written Torah does it mention the laws of Shechita. Obviously there was an oral tradition and many, many other proofs. The Torah says Ukshartem la'osa yadecha. We just started a second off, just a little bit ago. Guys coming or no?
There's
what?
Yes.
Gordon's room, yeah. This is Torah Shabbat Pe'ah. You started Torah Shabbat Pe'ah, you're here. Okay? So we just mentioned, just for a minute, that it is obvious from the written Torah itself the existence of the oral law of the Torah Shabbat Pe'ah. The Torah tells us, for example, that we have to put on Shavitim La'osai Adecha, Ba'ilut L'Pifos Ben Enecha. If there wasn't an oral tradition, that pasuk would have been totally, completely meaningless. Supposed to put a sign on your hand. What does that mean? You tie a string around your finger? Does that mean you you put a crown on your head? What do the words mean? We wouldn't have a clue. Torah says, Lasasaka Malacha, you're not allowed to work on Shabbos. What does work mean? We wouldn't have a clue what any of these things mean. The Torah Shemichsav without the Torah Shemichsav would be a closed book. It would be not only a closed book, worse than a closed book. It would be a meaningless book. It is not possible, it's not conceivable that Hashem would present the Jewish people with a book that's totally, completely meaningless, that we would have absolutely no way how to put it into practice. So it is obvious, both logically and from the text of the Chumash itself, that there was a Torah Shabbat Pe'ah that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. Not only is this obvious, but it is basic to our Emunah, basic to our faith, to such an extent that the Mishnah tells us in the Sanhedrin that Kol Yisrael Yesh Lam Chelech Olam Haba, every Jew has a share in the world to come, with the exception, one of the few exceptions, of the Oma Ein Torah Min HaShemayim, the person denies the the authenticity of the Torah, a person denies the divinity of the Torah, so such a person has forfeited actually a share in the world to come. Such a person is not included in the ultimate reward, in the ultimate days of days to come, because such a person is undermining the basic fundamental yisodos, the basic fundamental principles of our belief. So belief in God and belief in the authenticity of Torah go hand in hand, as we spoke a little bit about in the Rebbe Musa before, that if a person denies the authenticity, the divinity of the Torah, so that's, there's nothing to discuss. There's nothing else. The summer's over, the year's over, life is over. If we don't accept that basic premise of Torah min Hashamayim, Torah from heaven. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Sanhedrin that this basic belief, Torah min Hashamayim, applies not only to the written Torah, applies to the oral Torah as well. A person denies the authenticity of the Torah Shebapeh, so such a person is Ein lo chelek be'elokei Yisrael. Such a person has no share in the God of Israel. Such a person has no share in authentic Judaism. We know tragically, historically, many, many times in our history, there were groups that came into existence that denied the authenticity of the Torah, and particularly the authenticity of the Torah Shebapeh. They came and went through the years of history by different names. Anyone know some of the names? Anyone know who they were? Some of the groups. One of them was the Tzedukim. I don't know where they started, the Tzedukim.
Tzadok and Vaisos.
Tzadok, right, very good. Tzadok. Tzadok and Vaisos were two, actually they were Talmidim of, I don't remember, but I think it was Tzadok, oh, good. They were students from the Talmud by Sheni, and they went off the proper path, and they denied the authenticity, and they started an entire movement, and they caused hundreds and thousands of Jews to follow suit. And this was a major break in terms of the acceptance of Torah Shebapeh. This movement in a different shape, in a different form, historically reared its head a little bit later than we know.
The Karaites,
very good. The Karaites. The Karaites actually still exist today. You can still find them. Still,
yeah,
a few of them. That's right. Yeah, there's still a couple of them floating around today in Eretz Israel. For the Karaites, for other historical reasons, also denied the authenticity of Torah Shebapeh. Unfortunately, in our own generation, or particularly in the last about 150 years or so, there were other groups within Judaism that denied the authenticity of the Torah Shebapeh. They happened to deny the authenticity of Torah Shebichsav also. And unfortunately, when one does that, so then there's really nothing to discuss in terms of the Torah. So the absolute given, the Yisod HaYisod, is the fundamental principle of everything we're going to talk about for the next couple of weeks, is this notion of Torah Shebichsav. We've got to think as to what is the Nekuda, what is the point that differentiates between authentic Judaism and non-authentic Judaism. So I think it's this point, and that's Torah min Hashamayim. We know within authentic Judaism there are a lot of different strands, a lot of different brands, a lot of different shapes and forms. You know, we know there are Hasidim, and there are Misnagdim, and there are Ashkenazim, and there are Sfadim, and there are Temanim, and there are Yekis, and there are Hungarians, and there are Litvishes, and I'm not a Sfadim, but I'm sure within the Sfadim themselves you have Moroccans and Tunisians and Egyptians, a lot of different beliefs. And you have people who are pro-religious Zionism, and you have people who are anti-religious Zionism, and you have people who are neutral on religious Zionism, and you have people who are a little bit more pro-secular studies, and those a little bit more anti-Zionism. Yeah, you have a lot of different shades and shapes and forms within Judaism, and within the Jewish people today in the year 2008. And the question is, where do you draw the line? What ultimately is the line of demarcation when we're willing to say that this particular group is, I may disagree with, I may strongly disagree with, and I may even express my opinion, hopefully in a respectful way, hopefully with the understanding that the other person may be entitled to their opinion, but the opinion is still within bounds. It's within the realm, it's still under the general umbrella of a Jewish point of view. And when do we say that this is out of bounds? When do we say that that we've crossed that line? What is the red line? What is the line of the sand, the proverbial line of the sand when it comes to Torah? At what point do we say that this particular ideology is just not consistent with Torah belief, and this is just out of bounds? And I think that it's quite clear that it's these two words that ultimately draw the line of demarcation, that's Torah min Hashamayim. That if you accept Torah min Hashamayim, you accept Torah being from heaven, being divine, then we can discuss the details, we can discuss, you know, different nuances of Torah belief and practice. Once that line is crossed, then there's really very, very little to discuss. Then we're talking about something which is not part of our Torah, part of our tradition. It's not part of what we would deem authentic Torah Judaism. If this fundamental principle of Torah min Hashamayim is so critical, so we have to ask ourselves a few basic questions about this. What do we mean? Let's define this term properly, the same way we, you know, in halacha we try to define things rigorously, analytically, we try to give precise halachic definitions. So in the world of machshava, the world of thought, the world of hashkafa, also we want to try to understand things properly. What do we mean with that term, tar min hashamayim? What do you think that term means, tar min hashamayim? It is. I think the term means tar min hashamayim. Both tar shel chesav and tar shel hapeh. What do you think that means? Yeah, what's your, by the way, in the first couple of times you speak, please introduce yourselves, otherwise I'm never going to learn anyone's names.
Zach Shippen.
Zach, okay, yeah, Zach.
So maybe it's saying that you cannot deny that God gave the Torah as opposed to Moshe giving it.
That's very good. So that's actually your Mechavein. Zach is alluding to a phrase that appears in Masechet Sanhedrin, where the Gemara says that if a person says that Moshe wrote the Torah on his own, in contrast to getting from Hashem, that's called a kofer b'Torah. That's a person who denies the authenticity of the Torah. Very good. Excellent. But let me ask you a question. Let me rephrase the question a little bit. Do you think that the term Torah min Hashemayim refers to the Torah shebichsav in the same way that it refers to Torah shebatel? What do I mean by that question? Yeah. What's your name?
Zeb,
yeah.
I think they're both from Hashem.
Right. Hope so, right? For sure. Tell me, so what do you think it means? What do you think? Do you think there are any differences between the two?
One is oral and one is written.
Besides that, in terms of the nature of Min HaShemayim, I'm going to throw out a funny question. Okay? Here's a funny question. When Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai, was he carrying Mishnah Berurah with him? Was he carrying Rosh Hashulchan? Rosh Shulchan Aruch, Atur, Rambam? It would have gotten very, very heavy.
Marshall Kazel?
Oh, yeah.
The Torah Meshmah is probably referring to like the law or the Torah as it was given, and then anything else that was given later was Torah Shabbat.
Okay, Moshe's onto something. We're going to try to refine that a little bit. Moshe's already onto something. Let's take Torah Shebichsav. Go backwards for a second. When we say that Moshe received Torah Shebichsav from Hashem, what does that mean? That means from the first days of Bereishis to the last lamed of Leinei Kol Yisrael, that Hashem dictated to Moshe letter for letter exactly the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. That's exactly what it means. Pshuto kimashmo. Simple, straight meaning. That every single word and every single letter was given by Hashem to Moshe, dictated, verbatim, word for word. Ever find it fascinating? You ever see a Sefer Torah that has any different gears in it? It's all the same. It doesn't matter whether you come from Yemen, whether you come from Tunisia, whether you come from Poland, whether you come from Hungary, it doesn't matter where you come from. It's all the same Torah. So the Torah Shebichsav, there is no question, that was given the days of Bereishis, the Lamed of Leinei Kol Yisrael, from Hashem to Moshe, and Moshe wrote it down. Is that 100% true what I just said? Anyone know the possible quirk to what I just said?
Well, haven't been. And yeah. So like the parts where like Moshe is like, I don't know, like confronted with like rebellious people and like, maybe
the
guys, like, did you write that stuff?
Oh, you said it. You said the magic words. The last eight psukim of the Torah, where Moshe dies, there's a machlokas hatanoim in Maseches Menachos Daf Chav Tes. Who wrote those last psukim? Now, Hashem gave those last psukim. There's no question those psukim are divine. Anyone know the machlokas?
Not exactly, but I think Yeshua is the one.
So one Tana says that Yeshua wrote those last eight psukim, and the other Tana says Moshe actually wrote it, even though he hadn't died yet. The Gemara says he wrote it with tears in his eyes. Moshe kosei b'dema.
I think there's actually a part where he had to write something about himself, which was, I think, somewhat difficult because he was so humble.
It was difficult, but Hashem told me he has to write it anyway. Right, very good. So the Torah Shebichsav, again, with a very, very small nuance, the last eight psukim, but again, that's just a technical question, who wrote it into the first eight of the Torah, but clearly were given by Hashem, either to Moshe or the last eight psukim to Yeshua, perhaps, word for word, letter for letter. When we speak about the Torah Shebapeh, so we're speaking about a little bit of a different concept. When we speak about Torah Shebapeh, we're speaking more about concepts of Torah Shebapeh, halachic concepts of Torah Shebapeh, that were given to Moshe, and the words, let's say the words we have, for argument's sake, the magic words, Ketzad Eidim Nasim, everyone learned that already today? Everyone fell on that base today? Okay, Ketzad Eidim Nasim is over. Did Hashem say those words to Moshe? Not necessarily. There's no reason to say that. What did Hashem tell Moshe? Well, in the Torah Shebichsav is Edom Zomim. And then Hashem explained to him, what is Edom Zomim? You know, if you would read the Chumash itself and try to figure out what Edom Zomim is, would you figure it out on yourself? Oh, okay. Maybe, but would you know? Would you know what to do if the Adam said the guy's a ben grusha ben chalitza?
Cut in.
Could you figure it out? Would you know? Would you know what Adam Zomen are? That means that only in a case where the second set of Adam said the first set were with us. Would you have known that? I'm not sure I would figure that out myself. Hashem explained that to Moshe. So Hashem explained to Moshe the concepts of Adam Zomen, the concept of Adam, the concept of Shabbos. Hashem said to Moshe, Losasa kom alacha. And you think when he said Losasa kom alacha, he handed him Rabbi Riviat's 3, 4, 5 volume on the Hilchos Shabbos, 1,000+ pages? I don't think so. But what Hashem did explain to Moshe is, okay, Moshe, time for Shira, 39 malachas, let's go through them. Choresh, now let's plow. What does plowing mean? Let's discuss it. Kotzer, what does harvesting mean? What is bishul? What is cooking? And that's what we mean when we say that the Torah was given min hashamayim to Moshe. So not the words of the Mishnah Berurah, but not even the words of the Mishnah, not even the words of the Gemara, but the concepts of Torah Shabbat were explained to Moshe.
Couldn't we say that it would be included in Torah Shabbat Ksav also, like Rabbi Akiva could have made halacha from every tag?
Okay, so we're going to have to see some of the relations between Torah Shabbat Ksav and Torah Shabbat as we go on. You're right. You may be able to see some of the Torah Shabbat in the Torah Shabbat Ksav, but we got to get there first. Okay, good. What's
your name
again?
Gavi Werder. Gavi, yeah. So saying that since the Torah Shabbat
Ksav
was given directly to Moshe, so couldn't we say, Hashem gave it to Moshe and he said directly to the people. It wasn't like he changed what Hashem said. If he said directly to them, how would they get into the future?
Fantastic. You're leading me into the first major question, the issue of Machlokas. How does that fit into this whole picture? It's exactly the direction we're going. Very good. Excellent. Excellent question. So again, so we know about Torah Mishnayim as a basics, basic principle. We know Torah Shabbatzav, Torah Shabbatzav. We see there's a little bit of a nuance of a difference. Since the name of the Shir is Torah Shabbatzav, I want to further break down Torah Shabbatzav. And I want to introduce a concept. The concept is called Halacha L'Moshe V'Sinai. The Halacha was given to Moshe at Sinai. Anyone knows where that term appears in the Gemara?
A few places.
Right, the Gemara doesn't use that exact term. It's probably referring to that. You're right. But anyone know where that term? I thought you were going to say you started to call the Gemara in Sukkos. I was getting got all excited. There's a Gemara in Sukkos that says Lach Moshe Mizinai. But you're almost on target.
There's a Gemara in Tinus that brings down a Bryce, the Esther Natios.
Well, okay, so anyway, then I learned that. It's pretty serious halachas over there. S&T is a very, very technical din in terms of Hilchos Shemit. I'll leave that out for now. Nisach HaMayim, that's a good example. Anyone know what the mitzvah of Nisach HaMayim is?
Drawing the water.
On Sukkot, there's a mitzvah to pour water on the Mizbech. Does it say that in Torah Shabbat Ksav? It doesn't say it anyway. Gemara says Allah Moshe Sinai. Let's bring a few things more down to earth for us. There's a Gemara Maseches Menachos that says the following. How do you know that your tefillin has to be black? I don't like black, but we'll make purple tefillin. Go do me something. How do you know? Allah Chol Moshe Sinai. How do you know has to be square? Allah Moshe Sinai. So far, two for two. How do you know there's a shin on the Bayesh Arosh? Allah Chol Moshe Sinai. So those are just three examples I just pulled out because they all have to do with tefillin. We can associate, we can identify with all of them. The Gemara lists off, rattles off a whole series of different halachas, the Moshe Mesina. Comes the Rambam. Rambam wrote a many, many fantastic, wonderful svarim. Doesn't need my approval. But one of his svarim is his introduction to Perish and Mishnayos. It's translated into English also. It's called Introduction to the Talmud by the Rambam. Introduction to the Mishnah. I would really strongly recommend. It's very, very good reading. The Rambam develops the following principle. That the term Halacha L'Moshe Mesinai refers to a very, very specific part of Torah Shabbat Peh. It refers to a part of Torah Shabbat Peh that never in a million years would you ever see in the Torah Shabbat Ksav. You would never know that this particular Halacha is true unless you heard it from your Rebbe, you heard it from his Rebbe, you heard it from his Rebbe back to Moshe Rabbeinu, back to Kadosh Baruch Hu. I dare anybody, I challenge anybody to open up a Chumash and find me a source in the Chumash that tefillin have to be square. You see square there? I don't see anything about being square. it is intuitively obvious, as the Rambam, there is no source in Chumash at all. Not a pasuk, not a drasha, nothing, zero, not a hint, not an allusion, nothing that has any indication that tefillin have to be square. The only way we know that tefillin have to be square is because Hashem told Moshe. That's what the term halacha l'moshe m'Sinai means, according to the Rambam. It's the purest of the pure tarsha about that. It has zero connection to tarsha l'chsav.
That's
100% right. You know who did that? We just mentioned them before. It's Tukim and Karoim and Rachinami. So guess what? We have a tradition. Ish, Mipi'ish, 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 and Moshe Rabbeinu. And I'm not talking about one person's tradition. You're talking about in each generation, thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of Tamidim who learn from their Rabbeinu, who learn from their Rabbeinu, who learn from their Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay? So again, so fill in black square shins, halacha Moshe Mesir. That's one part of Tarshimah. Comes the Rambam and tells us, there's another term, it's called a Peirush HaMakubal Misinai. Peirush HaMakubal Misinai means an interpretation that was given in Har Sinai. Anyone have any idea what that means? Peirush HaMakubal Misinai. What in the world do you think that could possibly mean? It's not Halacha Moshe Misinai, it's Peirush HaMakubal Misinai.
Okay.
It means
that
there
is something from Torah Shem Hatzav. But again, a pasuk when you want something out, for example, when the pasuk says, you know, you should sit in your sukkah for 7 days, and then it says, you know, kapos amar menaches, ovos menachal, you learn from that you should take a little extra tzedakah and love, and you should sit in your sukkah.
Unbelievable, Gavaldik. You gave the example I was going to give. Okay, very good. It's a pasuk in Chumash. The Pasuk Chumash says something, and it's unclear what the meaning of the Pasuk is. The Pasuk says, V'lokachtem lechem v'yavrishom priyei tadar. Anyone want to translate that for me? Priyei tadar. Do you want to
say?
Hershel, yeah.
Beautiful fruit.
A beautiful fruit. Sounds good. Any ideas what it could be?
Yeah.
It could be an apple, it could be an orange, it could be
a dar, dwells on the...
Oh, I mean, it could be a half a dozen other fruits, right? Hadar can mean a beautiful fruit, I mean any beautiful fruit. How do you know it's an Esther fruit? How come in Shul, where do you live? Pesek. Okay, where do you daven Pesek?
I daven at the Adas Yom.
Okay, I guarantee you that nobody ever walked into either Adas or Yom Gizriel on the first day of Sukkot carrying a banana. Nobody ever walked into Shul carrying an apple. Why? Why not? It says Priyei Tzadar. I tell you, I guarantee you, that nobody not only never walked into Pesach with an apple or banana, no one since the days of Moshe Rabbeinu ever walked the shoulder for their sukkahs or any other fruit than an Esrog. How do you know Priyei Tzadar means an Esrog? There's only one answer to that question. Hope you got the right one. If you have another answer, it's the wrong one. There you go. What do you call it? Not a halacha Moshe Mesinai, but what you really meant to say is, if you do say it in here, Perish Hamakubo Nisina.
It's by some idea we have to go into the whole thing like it tastes like pre-AIDS, it tastes like
we're getting there. Perish Hamakubo Nisina means that there's a pasuk in Chumash that could be understood in many different ways. We wouldn't know what it necessarily means. We may not necessarily mean it means an Ezra. And yet we have a tradition of Perish Hamakubo Nisinai that it means such and such. That's not halacha l'mash Nisina. That's a Perish HaMakubal Misina. It's different. It's not the same thing. One is Halacha Moshe Misinai, which means it has nothing to do with the Tarshim Chsav. One is the Perish HaMakubal Misinai, which is an interpretation of a Pasuk in the Tarshim Chsav.
How do you say that the Inak? Yeah. How do you say that saying that the Tefillin should be square? How is that different than saying that the Kriyat Hadar should be in
Esther? Oh, very good. The word Hadar has a meaning, right? We don't know which fruit it is, all right? I'm going to continue for what? Herschel?
Yeah.
Give what Herschel said. The Gemara tells us in the Sefer Sukkah that if you look at the Chumash carefully enough, close enough, you will find hints to the fact that a Priyei Tadar is really an Esrog. Anyone know some of the hints? Hadar, some guys in that. How do you know some of the hints? Yeah.
That when you
Very good. Esrog is the only fruit that's a dar, but Yolana Mishana Lashana. It's a type of a fruit that stays on the tree from year to year. Apples and oranges don't do that. Any other ideas?
Yeah, it tastes like the wood and
says. Tastes like the wood and the fruit, right? Or hinder is a lot of lush and water, maybe.
A lot
of different. The Gemara shows us within the Tarsha itself, you could see already a hint, you could already see an allusion to the Tarsha about that. Does this mean that this is the source of the Acha? Does this mean that, let's say, from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu until the Mishnah and Sukkah, so some people take oranges, some people take bananas, and then the Tanoim decide, hey, let's figure out what the right thing to do is, Chas v'Shalom, Sukkah Rambam. The real reason, the real way we know that an Esrog is appropriate to others in Esrog, is because it's a Perush HaMakubal Misinai. That's the real source. Within the Perush HaMakubal Misinai are hints or allusions within the Tarsha B'Chsav to the authenticity, to the truth of the Tarsha B'Alpeh. Halacha Moshinai, don't even look for the hints. There is no hint to Pshat and they'll say Adecha, that means square. Nothing, zero. It's pure, pure in the purest sense, Tarsha B'Alpeh. So we have two different terms. We have Halacha Moshe Mesinai. We have Perush HaMakubal Mesinai. Sometimes the Perush HaMakubal Mesinai is not just explained the Tarsha B'Chsav, but sometimes it even appears to contradict the Tarsha B'Chsav. Anyone have any ideas? Give me one or two examples where the Torah says something, and if you would walk away from the Tarsha B'Chsav, you would come up with one idea. Comes the Tarsha L'Peh and says, no, the Perush of this pasuk is totally different. It's the 180 degree opposite.
Well, it's not like a
totally
opposite, but
spell it
instead of
shorter
through your eyes.
Not very good. Very good. That's a pretty good one. Okay, pretty good.
You shouldn't have any lights on Shabbos.
Little Svarish, okay. That's also possible. I'm thinking of another one. This one, that's a famous one. The Torah says something, and if you would just read the Torah Shabbosav, you would come away with a very, very different picture of what the Allah actually is. The most blatant example, if you guys would jump on me. Everyone here learned Baba Kama?
Eye for an eye.
Eye for an eye. Eye and you read the Chumash, English translation, and eye for an eye. Is that the aloha? Never was, never will be. Eye and Zion says the Tarsha B'Alpeh is mama. How do I know that? Because Hashem told Moshe that's the Perush HaMakubal Mesinai. Anyone learn Baba Kama here? Anyone learn the 8th prayer of Baba Kama? The first daf of the 8th prayer of Baba Kama brings you about 20 different makaras. It's about 10 different makaras, 10 different sources. Within the Tarsha B'Chsav, that ayin takas ayin must not mean literally an eye for an eye. What is that? Is that halach moshinai or perish makub misinai? It's obviously perish makub. Anyone know any others? There's another one that also was a pretty famous one. The Torah says a certain mitzvah applies in a certain day of the week, and the simple reading of the pasuk would be such, and the halacha says totally different.
Shavuos?
Very good. Mimachros HaShabbos. The Torah says that when you start counting Sfiras Omer, from the day after when? After Shabbos, sounds like Sunday. Sounds like the first day of Sfiras Omer is always Sunday. Sounds like Shavuos is always going to end up on a Sunday. Is that the halacha?
No.
Not at all. What does Shabbos mean in the Chumash? Halacha Shabbos?
Seventh day
after Mimachos Shabbos, after the first day of Pesach. Right after the day of resting, the Shabbaton, after the first day of rest, Mimachos Shabbos. So here you have an example of a parish of Makubal Mesinai, which basically contradicts, in a sense, the Tarsha B'Chsav. So, we have Tarsha B'Alpeh, we have different types of Tarsha B'Alpeh. We have Perushim, Mekubal Mesinai, we have Halacha Moshe Mesinai. The common denominator between the two is that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu exactly the details, word for word, these Halachos and these Perushim. Now we get to the third part. Anyone who's ever learned any Gemara knows that sometimes you'll find halacha appears, mishnah appears, brisa, statement of the Gemara, and the Gemara will ask, how do you know that the following is true? And the Gemara quote you a pasuk, quote you a drasha. What does a drasha sound like? You guys have learned enough Gemara to know. Give me an example of a drasha. It says S. So the word S comes to include such and such. Or it says Vav, and the Vav comes to exclude something else. Or
Tasa Veda Sachicha, Vav Metzia.
Good, Sachicha means this, right?
Okay. It's only referring to a Jew.
Right, good, excellent. You have hundreds, thousands, maybe tens of thousands of these examples in throughout Shas, but there'll be a particular halacha, but the Gemara will try to quote a makor for it, and all of a sudden we find something very, very strange. The word that we mentioned before, but now we get to Machlokas. creeps in. All of a sudden, we have machlokes. Rabbi Meir Omer, the halacha such and such, and Rabbi Yehuda Omer, the halacha such and such. What's going on? How can it be machlokes? Comes the rabbi and says, there is no machlokes in halacha l'moshe b'sinai, and there is no machlokes in a parish of l'kubu b'sinai. There never was a machlokes whether it's on a square, and there never was a machlokes whether Shavuos is on a Sunday or any other day of the week. But Tzdukim disagree, but that's not called a machlokes. Remember we said that anything which denies the authenticity of Torah Shabbat Peh is by definition not part of authentic Judaism, so we're not going to deal with those opinions that are valid opinions within what we're discussing. Yeah. There was never a Tana that got up and said, Rabbi Meir Omer, Tefillin should be round. Rabbi Yossi Omer, that Ayin Tachas Ayin is literal. There never was such an opinion. Why not, says the Rambam? There was never a machlokes. Whatever was heard directly from Moshe Rabbeinu, there was never ever a machlokes about. Neither in the realm of Torah of Halach Moshe Mesina, nor in the realm of Perish HaMachu Mesina. Says the Rambam, there's a third type of Torah Shabbat Peh, and that's the realm in the realm of drushas, in the realm of new questions that come up, new shailas that come up. But guess what? We're not even necessarily given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Sinai. A new shaila comes up. We want to know, what do you do? A wild shaila, a crazy shaila, what do you do? So the Gemara will say, Rabbi Meir Omer this, and Rabbi Yehuda Omer this, and a machlokas develops. Says the Rambam, if you see a machlokas in Shas, then you know for a fact that this is neither halacha l'moshe b'sinai, nor a perish ha'makubim b'sinai. If there's a machlokas, that's a dead giveaway, says the Rambam, that it falls into the third category of Torah Shabbat Peh, that's called drushas. Halachas that are derived from the psukim, from an extra letter, an extra word, or minus a word, klal prado klal, different midos, shatarni drushas, different rules of interpreting the Torah Shabbat Peh. That's where machlokas enters onto the scene. Yeah.
Hashem
gave
like
the whole Torah to Moshe
at Sinai,
with
like all of those
things
happening. Why
can't he
also include
Malacha, which
like the problem should come up in the future for the
Torah Shabbat? Very good, excellent. What Hashem gave Moshe is the basic format of the Torah Shabbat Peh, and here's critical: the way to derive from the pre-existing Torah Shabbat Chassav and the pre-existing Halacha Moshe Sinai, the pre-existing Torah Shabbat Kulam Sinai, how to extrapolate to new questions that come up. That was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. And you know what those rules are called? We say in Davri every morning, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, the Shloshes Remidos HaTorah Drashas Behem. There are 13 different rules, and there are a little bit more. 13 is just one version of the rules, a little bit more. But the 13 basic rules is the principle of a Kal V'Chomer. There's a principle of a binyan av. There's a principle of shnei ksuvim, achishim zezeh. All those different kinds of rules. What do you do when you have an extra letter? What do you do when you have an extra word? What do you do when one pasuk seems to say one thing, one pasuk seems to say, what do you do? So Hashem taught Moshe the rules, gave him the set of rules, and he taught him, he showed him how to apply those rules. And Hashem told Moshe the following. In each and every generation, the Chachamim are supposed to try to figure out, based on their knowledge, based on their understanding of the Torah Shabbat Chassav, based on their understanding of Halacha Moshe Mesinai, based on their understanding of the Berush Lam Kabbalah Mesinai, what is the correct way to interpret the Halacha when new issues, when new shailas that perhaps nobody dealt with in the past come up. And the Rambam says that it was understood from day one that there are going to be machlokas. There are going to be different opinions about how to apply those rules. To give you an example, yeah.
Aren't there 70 ways to learn the Torah?
Oh, we're going to get to that. We're going to get to the Shirin part of the Torah. We're going to get to that in a minute. Who knows when the very first expression, the very first machlokas in halacha took place? I know what you're going to say, and I'll tell you already that's not the right answer, but you can say it anyway.
Yes, even new answer.
Good, I knew you were going to say that, it's not the right answer. I mean, the Gemara does say that's the first one, but that's not the right answer. Who knows? When was the very first halachic machlokas that took place? Four bilchas. Close. It's in Chumash. It's explicit in the Torah Shabbat. It wasn't a machlokas, because I would call that the first shaila. It wasn't even the first one, it was a shaila that was raised. See, that wouldn't call that a halachic machlokas. I call that a fight. A halachic machlokas. It's a sefer vayikra. That's the alphabet, guys. Sefer vayikra. Parsha Shmini.
That's really weird.
It was right around the time of the reveal, right after the events of the reveal. You're just about right. Almost. Not the avodah, but the eating of the karbanos. Who remembers the story? Pasha Shmini. Not even a Abihu die. What's the halachic status of somebody when their immediate relatives dies? They become what's called an oneng. An oneng in the days of the Beis Hamikdash, the days of the Mishkan, is not allowed to do what? Is not allowed to do avodah. What else is he not allowed to do? He's not allowed to eat karbanos. Even the Kohen Gadol who's allowed to do the avodah is not allowed to eat karbanos. So Aaron's two sons die. So it turns out that Aaron's an Onan. Sons are Onanim. So they can't eat karbanos, right? That's what it sounds like. Comes HaKadosh Baruch Hu and tells Moshe, tell Aaron and his sons, they should eat the karbanos that were brought that day. Which karbanos were brought that day? I don't remember. Who was the Rosh Chodesh Nisan? So there were three special karbanos that were brought that day. Three special seer, remember? One was from Musaf Rosh Chodesh. One was Nachshon Ben Aminadav, it was the first day of the Nesiyim, of the 12th Nesiyim, and one was the par that was the sar that was brought as part of the Chanukah Samikdash. So there were three different karbanos that were offered on that day, three different korban chatzes that were offered. And Hashem tells Moshe that those karbanos that are brought today is a special halacha that it overrides the halachas of Aninus. It breaks the rules of Aninus. And today everything is special. Today Aaron, go ahead and eat the karbanos, even though normally it only would not be permitted to. That was told by Hashem to Moshe, related to Aaron and his sons. What was the shayla that now came up? Sounds like Hashem told you what to do. What's the shayla? Comes Aaron, makes the following cheshbon. What was his cheshbon? Lom de shavart. What did Aaron say? Aaron said there were three karbanos that are brought today. Two of them are special occasion karbanos. They're never going to be repeated again for the Mishkan and for the Nachshon Ben Aminadav, the first in the Nesiyim. But one of them is just a plain and simple old karban, namely the karban of Rosh Chodesh. So Aaron said, just because Hashem said that today there's a special halacha, a chiddush, that the halachas of Aninus are going to be overturned, that only makes sense vis-a-vis the special karbanos of today. But do we have a right to extrapolate from the special karbanos of today to the sar of Rosh Chodesh? Rosh Chodesh is a regular karban. It just happens to be Rosh Chodesh. It could have been Tezvav Nisan also. It happens to be Rosh Chodesh. Says Aaron, along this, just because Hashem said that the special karbanos are Adolcha Aninus, push off Aninus, who says that the regular karban of Rosh Chodesh pushes off Aninus also? That was Aaron's lomdus. That was Aaron's chiddush. What am I saying?
It
could be. So Moshe, very good. Moshe, what's your name, sir? So Josh Tynes, he's a whole like Moshe Rabbeinu. He says, no, that if there's a special halacha that you can offer these kabanas beninos, Rosh Chodesh, you can also offer beninos. Imagine what's going on here. There was a machlokas between Moshe and Aaron. Now, what did Hashem say? Unclear what Hashem said, right? What did Hashem say to Moshe? All Hashem said to Moshe is that you eat these karbanos today. But now, we can have a machlokas. Do we have a right to extrapolate, to compare the karban of Rosh Chodesh to the other two karbanos? So there's a svara to compare them, and there's a svara to distinguish between the two of them. Guess what, Rabbi Sai? Amma Moshe Rabbeinu such. Amma Aaron HaKohen such. A machlokas. Strange, who won the first machlokas? Aaron. Vayishma Moshe vayitav b'enav. After Aaron explained to Moshe what his svara was, Moshe thought about it a little bit. He said, you know what? The brother's right. What a nevus. Wow, that's quite an honor. So I guess he was called Anam Mikolodom. Moshe said, Aaron, you got it right. You understood. You extrapolated. You were able to derive the halacha more correctly than I am. And I'll mold it to you that you're correct. That's the model that we do ad hayom hazeh. New shaylas come up. New issues come up. New shaylas don't only mean new technological shaylas, new economic shaylas. That doesn't only mean that. Just sometimes new wild shaylas, new interesting things that people didn't think about. But people call Baruch Hashem or Rav Vashul, people call with shaylas. So some of the shaylas are straightforward. Sometimes they really got thick. really got to try to figure out, is this the same as what it says in the Gemara? Is it not the same as what it says in the Gemara? Is this the same as what it says in the Mishnah? Not the same. But the Mishnah Berurah, what is this the same as the Mishnah Berurah said? Not the same as the Mishnah. You have to figure out. You have to try to compare. You have to try to analyze. But we do Rabbi Isai, until to this very day, is precisely what Moshe did, precisely what Aaron did, precisely what Yeshua did, what Pinchas did, what Eli did, what Shmuel did, what David did, what Ezra Sofer did, I just skipped a few generations in between, what Rabbi Danasi did, Rav Ashi did, what the Rambam did, what Shulchan Aruch did, what the Mishnah Berurah did. We're doing the same thing. We are following the footsteps of Moshe and Aaron's very first machlokas. We're extrapolating, we're comparing, we're analyzing. And now the question becomes, how do we come to a conclusion? So the good old days of Moshe Rabbeinu, so it's only two people involved in the focus, and Moshe backed out. What do you do? What a strange term we have. You can have so many different positions. Not just the machlokas one-on-one. You can have 70 different possibilities or more. So what do you do? How can you have a pasuk in Shiloh? How can you ever know what to do? So here Hashem told Moshe something else. Hashem told Moshe that not only do you have to use these rules of reasoning, these analytical skills, and these midas shatran and drashim, and these svaras, and this way of thinking, this Torah way of applying to answer shailas. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe, when you have a machlokas, you know what you have to do? You have to follow the what? The rov. You take a vote, and we'll talk a little bit later on, probably not tonight, maybe tomorrow night, who is entitled to a vote. You take a vote, and majority rules. Achri Rabin Lahatos, Paskin Pashas Mishpatim, and that's how halacha is paskined. Says the Rambam, this whole discussion we just had for the last 15 minutes is irrelevant in the realm of halacha Moshe B'Sinai. It's irrelevant in the realm of Perish HaMakubo B'Sinai. It is only true, it is only relevant in this third area, in the area of drashas, in the area of svaras, of logical, analytical understanding of the Torah back and forth. Then and only then does any of this make sense. In Perish HaMakubo B'Sinai, and halacha Moshe B'Sinai, there's no machlokas, there never was a machlokas. And if you see a machlokas, then you know for a fact that's not halacha Moshe B'Sinai, says the Rambam. So these are the three basic parts of Darshan Rabbah. Hopefully we'll elaborate a few more as we go on. These are the three basic parts of Darshan. I'm going to throw out another somewhat controversial statement. Yeah.
So why did Hashem bend the rules for Aaron
Why did he bend the rules? That's a good question. You know, very often you have a clash in halacha, where, let's say for argument's sake, Chil Shabbos is pretty serious, and a person's life's in danger, so that takes precedence over Chil Shabbos. So very often you have conflicts in halacha, and now you have rules that deal with conflicts. So one of the rules of the conflict was that this was a unique situation, a one-time event, and this is more important than just endiness. Okay?
How does Aaron have a right to argue with Moshe on what Hashem said when Moshe was willing to use Hashem?
Oh, because very good. So Hashem, Hashem didn't say to Moshe that they should eat all the kibbutz. Aaron had to verify that. Aaron turns around to Moshe and he says to Rashi quotes, did Hashem tell you that we're supposed to eat all the kabanos? Or did you derive that on your own? And if the answer would have been Hashem told me, then Aaron wouldn't have even continued the discussion. Very good.
So,
we're going to get to some of those some later machlokes in. After the Gemara, we're going to have to talk about that in greater detail as we go on. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. Okay? We started this year that one of the Ikari Amuna, one of the basic fundamental principles of our faith, perhaps even the most basic, is the authenticity of the divinity of the Torah, both the Torah Shabbat and the Torah Shabbat. There's a corollary to that statement as well. Anybody know? One of the other Yigimel Ikari Amuna, one of the 13 principal faith that the Rambam puts together for us, Yigdal, remember the song Yigdal? There's a corollary of that statement. If the Torah is Min HaShemayim, there's no other Torah. If you know the Torah, excellent. The Torah doesn't change. The basic point of difference between Judaism and the other major two religions in our part of the world, Christianity and Islam, ultimately revolves around this very nekuda. Christianity believes that Hashem gave Moshe the Torah. Christianity believes that the Jews at one time were supposed to be doing what they were doing. What they believe is that all changed. that some event happened, some person came along and had the authority to change all of that. Islam also. Islam believes that Moses is a true prophet. But they believe there was a truer prophet who came later, who had the right to change many, many things. So everybody agrees, the three major world religions believe that Torah's Moshe was true. The question is, was it true or is it true? So we hold that it was true and it is still true, will always be true. And the other two religions, in a sense, hold that it was true but no longer is true. So that is absolute out of the pale in terms of our belief. Not only do we believe in the divinity of the Torah, we believe in the eternity of the Torah. The Torah doesn't change. You don't have to go too far in the Chumash to see that. The Torah says that explicitly. Nigos lonu v'neim ad olam la'asas kol divrei ha-Torah zos. Chukas olam l'doro seichem. The Torah is given for all generations. So the Torah doesn't change. Does the halacha have a change? Could the halacha have been such and such in one generation and be different than another generation? It sounds almost like apocryphal to say that. Got it? You have to have it to the back? Tosh. Tosh, yeah. Very good. We haven't even entered into the realm of the Rabbanans yet. We've got a long way to go until we get there. Okay? But we will talk about that hopefully. Can the halacha of the Araisas change? Sounds bordering on Epicurus, right? So listen carefully. Can halacha of Moshe Mesinai change?
No.
Absolutely not. Can Perushim Mikubalim Mesinai change?
No.
Absolutely not.
What?
Perushim. Well, it's forgiven by Hashem, right? Remember, the Devar Hashem doesn't change. So the Tosha B'Chassav doesn't change. The halacha of Moshe Mesinai doesn't change. The Perushim Mikubalim doesn't change. Can a halacha that was derived from a drasha or from a svara or from a comparison or from an analytical tool, can that potentially change from one generation to another?
Yes.
Absolutely.
See it in the Mishnah.
See it in the Mishnah. Anyone knows what I mean? What do you mean by that?
There's certain things that, like there's certain things where you pass in one way in the Mishnah, but later they pass in a different way.
Excellent. Very good. So there is a certain degree of change in halacha. But, clearly, the change cannot be in the basics. Cannot be in either the Torah Shemachsav, or the Halacha of Sinai, or the Perushim Mekubalim Mesinai. If it is a concept of change, we have to really define precisely what that means. We can only begin to understand change, maybe that they're abundant, that'll be a little bit later, but in the third area of Torah Shemachsav. So Mi'at Hashem, hopefully tomorrow night. I think tomorrow night we run also, right? Okay, so Mi'at Hashem tomorrow night. So I want to continue from this point. The role of change, what exactly does that mean? That the halacha can sometimes change, sometimes cannot change. Get a little bit of a better understanding what that means in light of some of the things we've talked about today. Okay?
It wasn't part of what Hashem gave down to us was like the right to darshan out.
Right, 100%.
So,
but different people can come up with different ideas about a darshan, and that may change from generation to generation, but we'll talk about that a little more. Okay?